Many people in the games industry say mobile gaming is dead. It's impossible to launch new games on mobile after IDFA deprecation. Well, is it true? Or are these the words spoken by those making excuses and blaming IDFA deprecation for bad planning and projections, not good enough product, or other reasons? Is IDFA deprecation being used as a scapegoat? Today, on with us on the podcast to discuss this issue and more, we have first, Aaron Friedman, CTO at Singular, a leading mobile measurements platform or MMP provider. Second, Levi Matkins, CEO at LifeStreet, a programmatic marketing platform for mobile. And finally, Warren Woodward, Chief Growth Officer at Uptick, a games growth marketing services company. Stay tuned for this controversial discussion. You're not going to want to miss this conversation. All right, welcome, guys. I thought we could just get straight to the point. We have a lot of people in the mobile games industry screaming and shouting about how IDFA deprecation has destroyed mobile marketing, has made new game launches literally impossible. But in private conversations and in a lot of talks with other game industry executives, I'm hearing this kind of counter narrative, which is more whispered, or I actually heard from you for the first time, Warren, that actually maybe IDFA deprecation isn't having as big, huge of an impact as some people are saying, and maybe it's a narrative to hide possibly, you know, bad accounting, bad projections, things like that. And so I wanted to like go back to this conversation we had before, Warren. Maybe you could explain kind of your perspective on IDFA deprecation and what you believe is the actual reality on the ground.
Sure. And it's really great to be here with you guys today. Had a lot of fun last time on the podcast. And we have some awesome guests here today with Levi and Aaron. So it's going to be fun. I guess to kind of sum up our perspective in it, like at Uptick, we have the luxury or vantage point of working on a number of different games with small developers, large developers, and also just talking to a lot of people. So we hear these narratives, UA is dead, iOS is dead, Facebook is dead, it's all dead, just give up. but it has really been, I'd say at our assessment, just a lack of big companies specifically being able to adapt quickly. Being a startup, we have, I think, a little more autonomy in kind of pivoting our focus. So yeah, I mean, in short, like we do about 2/3 of our buying on iOS right now, higher profit margins, higher scale. And it didn't take rocket science to figure out like a viable workaround. You just need kind of like a fresh approach, cross-disciplinary approach, using some engineering resources, some data resources, some UA expertise. But yeah, what I always tell teams is like, you don't need to use us. Like you can just, if you have the right kind of cross-disciplinary squad, you can stare at the problem for, you know, a couple of days, a couple of weeks, and figure out some viable workarounds that work for your business. I know, you know, teams like Singular have obviously been building in this area. So yeah, I think just don't listen to the narratives. Like there's plenty of viable ways forward. It's actually a super easy time to buy on iOS once you get tactics, less competition, lower CPMs, the math works in your favor. So I guess I'll just, you know, baseline it at that.
Levi or Aaron, you want to jump in here? What do you guys think?
I think with most things, it's complicated. And there is a tendency to just kind of scapegoat one particular narrative. You know, like, has IDFA deprecation had an impact? Totally. Is it as much as people make it out to be? I don't think so. I mean, I think if you were a huge, you know, platform, you've seen some real, you know, big effects of this. I think Eric at Mobile Dev Memo wrote a really long article on kind of like analyzing public companies, earnings reports and things like that. And he definitely saw that. You know, also, I think a bunch of other stuff is happening, you know, namely like rising interest rates in the world is having like a pretty big knock-on effect. You see just companies are really, really focused on profitability now and less kind of willing to invest in R&D. I mean, you see a world coming out of COVID restrictions, you know, so you kind of potentially have customer fatigue going on. So I think there's a lot of stuff actually happening. You know, I'd kind of echo Warren a little bit in saying that, you know, the majority of our buy-in is still on iOS. We still see a bunch of success. And yeah, CPMs are significantly down, but it all kind of like nets out in the wash to where, you know, savvy developers are still able to spend effectively.
Clearly there's a massive impact to the whole sector, right? But that's very different from, you know, does it have to be an impact to you? in your business, right, and can you work around it? So I think, right, yeah, two separate topics.
And Levi, maybe I can ask you a follow-up question before handing over to Aaron, which is, when you say interest rate increases having an impact, are you saying that because of interest rate increases, that's leading potentially to, you know, recessionary kind of effects on the macro economy, leading to less consumer buying power? Or how are you, what do you mean specifically by the interest rate increases?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's that trickle down consumer, but I don't really put too much credence on that at this point, actually. I think it's more in terms of how companies are willing to invest capital. I mean, you see it too. Okay. It's just public companies that are currently profitable, but see an opportunity and, you know, they're taking advantage of that narrative to say, hey, we really need to tighten our belts and focus on profit. And, you know, that's what public markets are rewarding right now.
Sure. I think to that point that you're making, Levi, I do hear anecdotally a lot of companies are shifting from like new game development to existing games, live ops, things like that. But Aaron, what do you think? What's your take?
Yeah, you know, and again, thank you for having me as well. It's pretty awesome to be in this forum, and you know, just kind of extending on what everyone said, that you know, it's complicated, and definitely we see success stories in iOS, and like, you know, like some of you have mentioned, they're the ones who are not necessarily publicizing that much, but they're like sophisticated advertisers actually doing very well on iOS and kind of saying, you know, we see it as kind of, they actually like the narrative that UA is dead on iOS because it's actually more opportunity for them, right? Definitely have been seeing that for sure. So yeah, I would agree with kind of, you know, that point around like, it's not that UA is dead, it's just bit different on iOS. The thing though, you know, just to add the debate there, is it really is different and you need the resources sometimes, or you need to learn really, you know, how to deal with it. It's not, you know, the ones who've just tried to, I think we've seen like multiple types of advertisers out there. They're the ones who just try to do everything the same way, exactly the same way, didn't change anything, and just saw plummeting performance without, you know, like doing the actual work of like adapting to the matter. Exactly like Warren said, we did see that the adaptable companies, and it's not rocket science out there, right? It's like, yeah, just doing the work, figuring out like the new kind of mechanics, basically figuring out to adjust, definitely find their way to find success. And we also saw the companies who kind of said, you know what, it's just too complicated for us, so we're just not going to advertise in iOS, literally, like dropping the spend completely, focusing more on Android, seeing kind of the CPMs kind of growing there and kind of making it more difficult, but kind of just afraid of like tipping the toes in the water. So, you know, it's just like a mix of experiences and, I don't know, like risk analysis, I guess, for companies and really resources of how much they want to invest. I do think it's an opportunity, right? For the ones who have the resources or want to kind of learn and adapt, it's a great opportunity for them.
I was just going to say to that point of so many companies just tapping out. I keep saying that like there's analysis paralysis of like, we can't figure this out. We're just not going to do anything. It's crazy to me. It's like, this is like half or more of your business. Like, throw some sort of reasonable resource at this, like integrate, like talk to more companies that we've seen this as like such a go-to tactic for major companies of just bowing out of the ecosystem. It's like truly insane to me.
And Warren, like, how difficult is this problem? You said it requires like a cross-disciplinary approach. You also mentioned that you got to kind of stare at the problem to figure it out. Like, what would you guess would be the percentage of companies who have figured it out? And like, if you are to throw resources at the problem, what does that mean? Like, is it a huge stink of resources, or is it more reasonable?
I was going to say I have a biased perspective because we're like the plumbers. Like, you don't call the plumber when everything's going great. Like, and you don't call us to come and help with your UA if you've got it figured out and you're crushing it. So I probably have an overly negative and pessimistic view because I talk to almost exclusively teams that are struggling. But as far as like what it takes, I mean, there's a few ways. One is there's just kind of two meta paths. One is you work within the tool set that Apple has provided us, which on one hand has gotten better over time, but on the other hand is still leaving huge gaps from you know, the way that we've traditionally executed UA and what you can do today. But I've seen some companies that have said, no, we're just going to focus. We're going to work within these confines and work within the variables, we had to take a different approach. We're not developers ourselves, so we can't rely on our developers having a deep, nuanced understanding of scan modeling, of what's coming out with each version. So we actually, I don't want to say ignore, but we use like the bare minimum needed data from scan, which is just the install data. So like our, I mean, and I always talk pretty openly, our tools and our model is basically what I call like dynamic polling. So we just looked at the opt-ins of the users that agreed to be tracked for every segment of your campaigns and apply those monetization tendencies to the rest of the sector, getting the install count via the scan installs as source of truth for installs. So we iterated with a bunch of models. That was good for us, not being a developer, so not being able to actually implement the scan methodology and just using kind of the minimum viable piece. But I always tell people, that's not the only way. This is just a way that worked with our business and in our model. So yeah, we have like three engineers on our team, a couple of data scientists, a couple of UA people, and just working cross-disciplinary, brainstorming, testing models with that.
Got it. And Aaron and Levi, have you guys seen other companies that have kind of figured out other approaches besides what Warren mentioned? And Warren, it's awesome you're so open about your own specific methodology, but what have you guys seen?
Yeah, I mean, where we sit, honestly, you know, like the scan adoption is pretty limited. I mean, I think people are reliant on, you know, Singular and others to kind of help solve that piece. So, you know, I think the mechanisms are a little bit different. So like the targeting has certainly, like, that world has shifted upside down, and there needs to be, and there has been a bunch of innovation around how to buy more effectively in absence of any sort of profile data. And then there's the measurement piece. So, you know, I think, you know, the measurement piece is largely like we've kind of kicked the can on that. I think the biggest, most successful buyers are. I mean, to Warren's point, like, yes, there is some that are saying, hey, we're going to use Apple's tool set exclusively. But, you know, it's a pretty conservative approach given what the rest of the market's doing right now, in my opinion. So we don't see that as a like big part of kind of successful programmatic buys right now. But I know it's there.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we're talking with many types of advertisers, the small ones, the huge ones, the ones who are more conservative, the ones who don't care, really. There's definitely a mix of methodologies out there. They're the ones who kind of say, yeah, we're doing like what we used to do, like with the opt-in IDA phase and with using probabilistic, and it works for many of the channels out there, and we just keep doing that. And for some advertisers, that works. I think a lot for the long tail advertisers. Also for the advertisers who don't run on Facebook, for example, or the major channels who only have IDFA opt-ins or scan, basically, right? So it just depends a bit on the media mix, the type of app that you're trying to advertise. It's definitely not for everyone, although a lot of the market is kind of using more like still keeping the device level data and just like limiting more of their channels. Then the other side, kind of more like what Levi mentioned, the more kind of, you know, conservative maybe companies, some of them are like very large scale brands who kind of saying, yeah, we're kind of, exactly like Warren said, limited to kind of Apple's tools, like heavily in SKI network, doing a lot of modeling on top of that. And yes, like, I mean, obviously we're coming from a bad view because we're like hiring like their infrastructure, especially like putting an emphasis on scan and kind of making the most out of it. I would say that, yes, the sophisticated advertisers out there, they're trying to use a combination, doing modeling on scan, but also definitely using the IDFA opt-ins to kind of apply it. Sometimes they use it for correlations, right? Making sure to compare the scan models with the IDFA data, so making sure it makes sense. Sometimes it's like kind of the addition of those two things. There are others who take even more, like there are other tools out there. Think about, for example, like the custom product pages that Apple provides. So you can actually like, create a link to a specific custom product page in the app store of your app. And then you can get actual statistics from the app store on your installs and purchases coming from that page. So there are ones who kind of combining basically everything together. So you're looking at IDFA opt-ins, scan installs and model data, and then custom product pages results. So you can see that there are multiple approaches there. It's all like around like data modeling, data comparisons, data correlations and all that. And yeah, and again, it changes by the company. But there's multiple tools, multiple ways to do this, and it's definitely not dead again.
One kind of pain point that extends outside of the UA practitioner to the businesses is like, okay, cool. We developed a system to buy for iOS Facebook and for Apple Search, which is using its own logic, and for the SDK networks, which are still using probabilistic, like, how does the CFO and the finance team still judge, like, iOS versus Google and where what's working, what's not, and where to put that next dollar when we have, like, different lenses for these different categories of traffic? We've seen that also be a big pain point for businesses.
For sure. And maybe kind of to add to that, definitely one of the hot topics that's been, like, decreasing dramatically in the last, I don't know, 6 months or a year is the whole notion of, like, medium mix modeling and incrementality measurements. And I'm thinking more on, like, those are the ones that we actually need to kind of answer to the CFO, exactly like you're saying. It's beyond, like, the specific campaign optimization, but, you know, what's the overall marketing contribution? How much of it is really incremental versus not? And I think there's a lot more, obviously, again, we've been kind of focusing on our own kind of medium mix modeling product to help these type of advertisers. And again, there's, like, the whole debate around that, like, how, where is it applicable, how accurate it is, like, where can you use it and all that. So it's, like, a topic on its own. But it's another tool set that another possible tool that marketers can use also to assess their overall performance in maybe a more consistent way across channels in a more strategic way.
Got it. And maybe for the audience who is, you know, more like just a developer who isn't that familiar with UA and marketing, I think one of the problems or one of the things that they're curious about is that, okay, I understand IDFA deprecation has had an impact, but then what is the order or the size, the magnitude of that impact? And so if you guys were to guess, like quantitatively guess or describe the impact of IDFA deprecation, you know, how would you characterize that if you were to just kind of throw out a number? And maybe the other question is this across, you know, every genre? Is this every mobile kind of game out there? Or is this, do you guys think this is affecting different genres differently?
So I actually looked at the data, and I think we've also included it in our latest ROI index. So yes, the data shows that there was an impact. Like at the very least, from a budget perspective, we saw that the iOS spend had dropped by 25%, like across the board, right? And definitely part of it has also shifted towards Android. Now, this is already from like 2021 from the beginning. It was a pretty dramatic drop. Like literally some companies have mentioned just like pause everything on iOS, just wait and see what happens. So it was that kind of paranoid kind of feeling. On the other side, we did see increases back to iOS spend. And I think a lot of it is also due to kind of improved tools and kind of improved expertise, such as like Orange Teams and such, that kind of enabled that ramp back up and that confidence that, you know, actually you can run UA back in iOS. So today we're actually in a pretty close stage to where we were like 2 years ago. You can basically say, yeah, maybe like without that kind of change, we would have been much higher. But yeah, that's kind of at least a very direct effect on that we can see from the data.
Oh, I was going to say, I could add a little context to kind of across genres, because we do see a lot of data on that. So I think there is, in the era of modeling, which is where we are for iOS right now, you know, no longer have deterministic results. The more data points you get, the more accurate your models are, you know, for whether you're using scan, whether you're using a tactic like Uptick does. So we do see an edge for games that can produce more frequent signals. So I'd say like there's two factors. Like if a game has more frequent small purchases and it's more mass market and can be operating at more scale, both of those variables will give an edge. So I'd say that with, you know, we're very focused in gaming, but like the game that would struggle the most right now, it would be niche, small audience, whale driven. Because then say that you're running a campaign on Meta and you're only getting the opt-in data for 1 out of 7 or 8 users, which is a common rate we'll see. Okay, well, if you only have like, you know, 0.5% payer rate in your game overall, and you're only spending $50,000 a month, like you're going to get very little data to populate models. So I think that we do see some, and our biggest breakaways have been leaning more casual, or leaning more mass market if it is a more hardcore game. Like maybe it's got a major IP, some other reason it's got broad appeal and can be larger scale.
Before IDFA deprecation actually got rolled out, that was kind of one of my theories, is that it would have basically the biggest impact on kind of well-driven games, and especially ones that have long payback periods and things like that. But like then I had guessed that the genres that would be most impacted would be 4X and social casino. Do you guys believe that to be true? But then at the same time, we're still seeing some social casino companies, or I don't know, I haven't really looked at them that carefully, but like, you know, certainly SciPlay is still top 10 in the US at least, and things like that. Would you guys agree or disagree in terms of those two specific genres, or do you think there are other genres that are more heavily impacted?
I don't have a lot of data on Forex. I do think social casino, like, has certainly been impacted. I think, you know, largely like where you buy has been impacted, and I think their overall scale is pretty impacted. You know, that said, like, you know, from where we sit in a programmatic spot, you know, it was just the truth that if there is an IDFA, Facebook Meta has better profile data than anybody else out there. And if they don't get to use that, those users are still there. And they kind of just fall down to others, you know, like us in the programmatic ecosystem that are able to kind of buy a little bit more on averages and swoop them up. So for us, we haven't really seen an impact for that genre specifically. But I suspect there's some pretty broad impacts in terms of like where they can buy. It's almost like, in some ways, I kind of was thinking about this earlier, it's kind of like buying TV ads in a way, where like, if you looked at it and it was like Supercell could buy a Super Bowl commercial, and presumably, yes, they were printing money, but presumably that worked for them as well. And, you know, there was enough sort of like broad mass market appeal to make that work for them. You know, would you see a super niche game getting good ROI on a TV commercial? Probably not. And that's kind of like a little bit of like where we've kind of gone back to in some sense.
Right. And Aaron, you had mentioned that, you know, you initially, the industry initially saw kind of a pullback on iOS budget, kind of shifting back to, or shifting over to Android. And now it's kind of back to levels from 2 years ago. So I guess one could argue that the biggest impact of IDFA deprecation, maybe not to ROAS, but to scale, to the amount of volume you can get for your games, or like, how should we, could we also interpret what you have said as perhaps that, you know, you really didn't know what your ROAS was, so you just kind of waited to see how things turned out. But now that if everything's back to sort of normal, maybe things are relatively okay or same-ish, or again, trying to characterize the scale of the impact, maybe it's not that huge of an impact. What do you guys think?
Yeah. I think personally that, again, it's a bit more complicated than that. It's not like a, mm-hmm. I don't know, like a print post-COVID, like everything is back to normal again. It's, the industry has definitely changed, right? And if you want to run UA on iOS, you need to do things in a bit differently than before. And like we talked about, all the different practices, either a different media mix or different tools or different methodologies, like something needs to be different. And it changes. So some of the advertisers out there kind of paused and then, okay, try to dip the toes in the water and kind of gain that confidence, scale it back up. We saw a lot of these, right? We saw the ones who are still not in iOS, right? And they're sitting cautious and kind of push their strategy to Android. And I completely agree with what Warren said kind of in the beginning. That sounds a bit crazy to me because there's so many opportunities there, but it's still the case. I do agree, you know, trying to, you know, like you're saying, you're trying to assess kind of the scale. I think it had an impact on the industry. There are ones who kind of, you know, just like back off because of that and they just don't go there, and that's are still apparent. But there are other ones who kind of, you know, adapted, figured things out, and they're kind of scaling back away. And even like with higher scale than before, because they're seeing more opportunity there for them, right? It's less competitive. So it just differs by the advertisers. So maybe like the averages or like the total spend kind of, you know, it seems like it kind of dropped and came back, but it's not like all the advertisers are like in the exact same state, right? It just shifted to the ones who are like seizing the opportunity versus the ones who are just like, I don't know, like wait and see, and or just like gave up on it completely.
Right. So there are winners and losers is what you're saying.
That's for sure. And part of it is kind of tying it to the genres. Like some genres were definitely impacted more than others. I definitely agree with kind of Warren's characteristics of these genres. But there are the ones kind of who kind of said, you know, you've mentioned kind of SciPlay is kind of SciPlay, or like they're a great company, or they're a customer of ours. So not commenting on them specifically, but there are companies who kind of said, regardless of like, maybe they were impacted a lot, but they've changed things and like try to work in a different way, and they found success, right? So, and there are the journalists who maybe are less impacted, but they didn't adapt at all, and they still kind of saw that impact in a different way, right? So it just differs by company.
Oh, I was just going to bring up a side topic that these comments put in my head, which is, do you guys have thoughts on, you know, some of the, I don't want to name specific names because they may be clients or customers of some people on the call, but any of the M&A activity that we've seen over the last year that's sort of directly informed by these changes and perhaps the internal budget, the internal bullishness of founders, of executives on the growth potential of their studios? Do you think that, how direct do you think the correlation is?
You know, it's our guesses, I think, but I guess, I think, like we said, like before, it was a pretty like dramatic year, like regardless also of kind of iOS and IDFA and all that. So it's hard to say like whether, I'm not familiar with any cases that were like directly associated by it. But yeah, so it's, it differs, I guess. I can imagine how some of the smaller companies out there who've seen the struggles might have been like scooped up, for example, because like there's and you can also see it, by the way, on the media side as well. There's been some consolidation on the ad network side in a sense, and that might also be related to kind of the changes going on there. I don't know. What do you think?
My guess is that's not a huge piece of it, but I do think it's, you know, it's like any of this. It's probably, it's in people's minds for sure. But, you know, it's been an interesting time in M&A for sure. And it's, yeah, it's just a weird kind of state of the economy and the world right now, I think, in our industry. So,
I mean, I guess to me, the things seem correlated. Like we see, Joe, you mentioned like, new titles are being canceled at a faster rate. Investing in growth of the games is down overall. So I think there's a narrative where, you know, companies typically don't seek an exit when they believe that when they have extremely high confidence in their future growth. And this is not like my area of expertise, but I don't know, maybe I'm assembling my own narrative, but it does seem like as the industry has struggled to adapt to how to launch and scale new games, there has been an acceleration, both small and some of the major players, of consolidation and M&A. And some of it may just be like strategic risk mitigation of, it's not that we just have more uncertainty. So maybe it's a good time to mitigate risk through investment, through you know, mergers. But there definitely, to me, seems to be a correlation.
It's like the multiples that we're seeing now in terms of, you know, purchase price on revenue or whatever are certainly significantly down from what they were, you know, 18 months ago or so. So the fact that deals are still getting done is definitely indicative of probably, you know, less confidence in your future growth. Because if you were super confident in your trajectory, now is not the time to exit. Now is the time to be a buyer and bargain hunt, you know, in M&A. So it's, there is something going on, certainly.
Yeah, my own opinion, Warren, is that I agree with you that what you are saying is part of the rationale, in my opinion, where I do feel like, you know, the M&A is happening because these companies need to show growth somehow. And if they don't believe they can do it organically, then they'll do it externally. But and maybe the narrative around IDFA deprecation has made people more fearful. And so with that fear that, hey, we will not be able to launch a new game or whatever, that just accelerates that, you know, the motivation to acquire an external studio that has products so that they can show that growth. And certainly, I think the way that companies are structured today and you know, corporate officers and leadership is incentivized is to show that growth. So yeah, definitely agree with what you're saying. And so maybe like coming back to, for a team out there or a game studio out there who wants to operate in this new world of IDFA deprecation or this new way of doing UA, could you talk to me about the impact to teams today versus how things were operating before? Like, how would you run your UA differently? You guys talked a lot about modeling becoming much more important than it was before, things like that. Like, maybe you could speak to me about the general changes to a team or to a process for a marketing team.
I think the tough thing right now is often investment in a division of the business for a more mature company is a byproduct of revenue or profitability. So there's a bit of a vicious downward spiral happening right now where if you want to solve for this, you actually need to short-term invest more resources in your growth marketing org. It might mean new hires. It might mean that you need to take some of your engineers working on engineers and data scientists working on other part of the business and say, hey, you're sitting on the UA team for the next 6 months just working on this problem. It also means that teams are having to cut their budget for tools that could help them. So it's really tough when businesses answer this by saying, okay, well, UA team, you're actually going to get less resources to solve your problem. And I think like ultimately, like there's going to be, you have to make some sort of short-term investment, like whether you work with a third party, license some tools, put engineering and data science resources on solving this, or just time getting to learn, Singular's resource systems for this, or, what the measurement provider you're working with, or doing research for tools. So yeah, you do have to make some sort of investment to solve for this, but I don't think it's as outsized as people want to believe it is.
We're trying to, again, as an MMP, we believe in the approach of trying to provide the tools to anyone to kind of start in so even if you don't have the internal resources, we're trying to basically be the company to provide you the tools regardless. They're the ones who have large data science teams dedicated to UA already, and they just want to have the data and the best signals and kind of refining it to their DB, and they're building kind of crazy models on top of that. And they're the ones who kind of don't want to know that, it just want the bottom line, just seeing how I under campaigns, making decisions. So we're trying to kind of provide the tools for all of them, across the board. So I think it depends a bit on, again, the scale of the company and whether they have the resources or not. But we're trying to, still kind of provide the best tools to each one of these scale. So despite the fact that kind of that the UA has changed, still make sure that all of them have the right tools to continue to do that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think by the time they get to somebody like LifeStreet or another programmatic platform, they've usually figured a lot of these things out already. If they haven't, they figure that out on their Facebook buys or their Google buys or wherever earlier. And so we're not seeing, honestly, from where we sit, we don't see a ton of team disruption. there's certainly different focus, certainly focus on modeling and what everyone's saying here. And then we obviously see more focus on creative and people sort of doing more, contextual kind of analysis that they can too. So that's certainly changed. And, where our teams are focused is so much less on how to enrich profiles, which was, 3 or 4 years ago, and how to, derive, better signals that we can give to our models and more compelling ad units and things like that.
And maybe I could ask you a follow-up on that, Levi. When you say there haven't been a lot of changes to teams, and maybe just, maybe it's just based upon anecdotally the people that I know, but it does seem like some of the changes I've seen are that some of these UA teams have gotten a little bit smaller, in that it seems like at least with smaller studios, there's more of a reliance on external folks like Warren or,
yep,
other external consultants rather than having anyone internally. But one, do you guys agree with that? Or is that just a few anecdotal data points that I'm seeing that I'm overgeneralizing? And two, if that is true, then is that an impact of IDFA deprecation, or was that just a general trend happening regardless of IDFA deprecation?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think you certainly are seeing smaller teams able to get more done, in my opinion. I wouldn't put that squarely on IDFA deprecation, though. I think we were kind of seeing that, already. There were the days of, working with 100 different ad providers are in the past. And I think that was happening already. And I do think the IDFA deprecation probably accelerated sort of that consolidation a bit. I don't know how directly related those are, though.
Yeah, I'll just tag on here. I have a lot of friends that, work in the UA field. That's how I came up. And I have never seen more extremely talented, smart people unemployed, looking for work than I have right now. And Joe, you mentioned in the notes for as we were planning for this that you're seeing a lot of people move into related disciplines. I've definitely seen that. For us, it's been historically, it's just been really hard to hire good UA people because they're so in demand. So it's definitely, we've been a little bit opportunistic of snatching up some really talented people. But it is really hard to see like friends that you know are so good at what they do, not being able to find as many opportunities. But I do think that shift of, and even for our own branding, we stopped talking about ourselves as like a UA house and we just talk about games growth. Because part of this new era is you're not going to solve these problems by like setting up your, you know, inside the Facebook dashboard, setting up your campaign a little bit differently. Like that's not the issue. And sometimes bigger companies will come to us and be like, hey, can you just run Facebook iOS for us? We don't want you to do creative. We don't want to use your model. Just do Facebook better. And we literally won't take those on because that's not how you solve the problems right now. It's like you have to be resourcing and thinking about creative different. You have to be thinking about your data different. And turning the actual knobs inside the UA channels means less, I think, than it ever did, actually, as the algorithms have gotten better and less of that data is even being passed to the channels. So, that's a few thoughts from our end.
Great. And Aaron, you had mentioned earlier that you felt like budgets, Apple relative to Android, were relatively back to normal levels. But could we kind of characterize the current state of UA in the context of Apple versus Google? Like, and you know, I've been heads down just developing stuff. So like, I'm not even sure if like the Google version of IDFA deprecation, is that even rolled out? What's the current state of the you know, kind of relative platforms in terms of UA?
Right. So, definitely Google announced their plans to do their own version of the IDFA deprecation in Android. It's called the GAD deprecation, and it's part of what they call the Android Privacy Sandbox. So it's like, a major change is going to happen in Android. They've announced it like well ahead in time. They announced it basically a year back last year, and it says it's going to happen 2 years from that point. So basically we've passed a year since then. Now they have a privacy sandbox in beta stage, and we have basically another year until it actually happens. The thing is that it's a bit different, or very different from what happened in the iOS, and there's some nuances there. For example, last click based on kind of Google Play Refer is still going to remain the same. So there's Android and iOS are very different platforms, so things behave differently. There are different mechanics and different tools to still get measurement and other things. And also Google offered some new APIs to improve it. So I guess the short answer is there is a big privacy change that is expected to happen around 2024. And there's a lot of planning that can be done there. It's going to be a bit different than what we saw before in iOS, but definitely room to like test and adapt as well.
I think one big difference between Apple and Google is, you know, plenty of people have talked about this, but ads are such a bigger part of Google's DNA and their revenue. And they, are going to be a lot more mindful of things that undercut that. And, from conversations and folks I know, at Apple, like it's clear, especially before these changes happened, that Apple, I think, much more discounted the whole UA ecosystem as even adding meaningful value. I think really underestimated how much of the discovery of their products came from outside forces and overestimated their own products, their own app store and the discovery methods within that and the editorial as being the primary driver. So I think they were maybe surprised by how much growth of certain products shrunk when they cut out the legs from external parties to be able to grow their apps the way that they could before. So I think we'll see. I think Google is a lot more mature in this segment because it's just a bigger part of their DNA and of their core business.
Okay. And maybe getting into a little bit of the nuts and bolts for people in the audience that want to know, like, what's actually working well or in the new environment. Are there any changes in terms of like campaigns or how you buy or anything like that? Some of the knobs you were talking about, Warren, has any of that changed dramatically, or what is the current situation there?
From a channel standpoint, if anything, and I think Levi referred to this, there's been more risk aversion. I mean, that's the theme with a lot of this. As budgets get smaller, there's more risk aversion. I think the main thing versus a few years ago, you know, I had a conversation earlier today where chatting with someone in a large company who was saying, you know, talking about the narrative of Facebook being dead as a channel. It's definitely not dead, but now it's like, it may be the largest channel. It's not default the largest channel. Kind of same thing with Google. So in our portfolio right now, we have games where Meta is the largest channel. We have games where Google is. We have games where TikTok is. And we actually have some where one of the larger SDK rewarded video networks is dominating all of those. So I would say the players have not changed. If anything, they've consolidated. But the sort of vying for who is driving the most profitable growth in a UA portfolio has become a lot more close and tense than it was a few years back.
I can add that, yeah, that definitely correlates with what we've seen in the data and kind of showed up. So there's it's really interesting to see that things have levered up a bit, even more than just a bit between players. Okay. But yes, like it's the same kind of media channel names that we're familiar with from before. You know, there's other trends that are kind of interesting in the market. Maybe connected to the IDFA deprecation, maybe not. Like, there's a lot of more conversation on CTV channels, for example, CTV traffic, and there are many more kind of experimenting with these channels and seeing some early success there. So there's kind of always there's like trends, you know, and kind of things that are kind of coming up. But uh-huh. You know, in general, in terms of like the media channels there, yeah, it's very aligned with what Warren said.
No, I was just going to say that. I was just going to comment real quick that that's a pretty neat byproduct, I think, of the IDFA deprecation. As like the profile value has dropped, you've started to see more players be able to kind of succeed and have a healthier kind of market versus 90% going to Google and Meta.
Yep.
Right. And so I thought as a final question, I could ask you about, Aaron, you were talking about there's interesting other trends like CTV, for example, but what are some of these other trends? Where are we headed? What's the future of performance marketing on mobile? Like, certainly we've seen, you know, a lot of changes in terms of teams, in terms of like performance and things like that that we talked about. But what are some of the other things that people should be aware of? Where is the future of UA?
I'm actually getting asked about this a lot, like what's the future of UA and all of that. And I think if I take like the measurement piece for a second, first of all, I think we're not done with the changes yet. There's more coming in, like I just mentioned, like the Android privacy sandbox. There's like, if I take it, like, again, we have like cross-platform advertising. We're also advertising in web, and there are kind of changes there as we speak, basically, with kind of the cookies deprecation and ITP. So privacy changes are still coming in, and I think in general, there isn't, like, from what we've seen, my guess is that there won't be like a, you know, kind of a silver bullet kind of solution to like SK network or privacy sandbox reporting to kind of solve everything. It's in a way, I come from the technology side, so for me it's kind of like an exciting challenge. There's like many tools and signals, and part of the challenge is now whenever you run a campaign or kind of look at your marketing efforts, there are multiple ways to kind of assess things, right? And the multiple tools that you can add. So I think in general, things are going to get a bit more complex. Like take SK Network version 4.0, for example. The latest kind of upgraded to Apple release for SK Network. Tons of changes, tons of features, but also a lot more complexity, more randomness. Like all kinds of things are going on there. It's not like, oh, Scan4 is now going to solve everything on iOS. No, it's going to provide more features, more tools to play around with. Very exciting for people like us to kind of experiment with. So, but, you know, again, exciting future, a lot of changes, a lot of kind of new opportunities, but also a lot of complexity, and it's probably going to continue for us. Yeah, I don't know what others think here.
No, I mean, I'll, you know, certainly echo what Aaron's saying on kind of like the mechanics of measurement and all that. I think it's certainly clear, you know, with the Google privacy sandbox changes coming, Apple not being done, we're not done talking about this stuff at all. And certainly new channels are coming up. You know, I'll be a little bit, I don't know, everyone's talking about this right now, but we are pretty deep in trying to explore like uses of generative AI in creative, for instance. And I think that's actually gonna, you know, over the next year to two, start to have some pretty big impacts on, you know, how and where people can effectively buy. So we're, you know, we're kind of early days like everybody else is, but, there's a lot of really interesting stuff happening there. I think, you know, like as a thought exercise, eventually I think creative production costs, be it in-game or in making ads go close to zero. And then you start to think like, well, what does that mean for what I can do in UA? And there's, you know, there's just a lot of possibilities that kind of start to open up. So that's kind of where our heads are at right now, at least on that front, in terms of like looking a little bit farther out on what might be new and exciting.
Right. And Levi, that application that you're talking about in terms of using generative AI for creative, how far off do you think we are from that? Are we, is this like months? Is this a year? Is how far away?
We're using it right now in creative.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it, you know, is it a little bit, it's new, it's early days. We're seeing good results. But I think it's changing, right? So, you know, like the text-to-text models are coming up with really interesting, good stuff right now. I think, you know, text-to-image is a good part of designers' workflow right now. I think we will eventually see text-to-video start to be viable. We're not there yet, certainly on video, but that's coming.
Right. Warren, you want to round us out?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, where are things going? What am I thinking about? I mean, to some degree, like the main topic we gather to talk about to me is it's almost like a non-issue. It's essentially like a solved problem if you take the time. I will, I don't want to shill too much, but I will do a quick plug. We recently brought our software side out of beta. So we're now just have teams like licensing the same software we've been using for our iOS work and the rest of our platform. But as far as like where we're focusing our time, it's actually a little more on the product side and like, where is gaming going? What are the next breakthrough titles and how do we adapt for them? So anyone who follows me and my company knows like we've been really deep in Web3. Like it's a bad market for all things crypto right now in general, but we do still think like games that use Web3 elements as part of their economies, there will be breakthroughs there, and being ready to launch and adapt to those and measure those. Similarly with cross-platform, I think a lot of leading games, like the idea of mobile and PC games is going to be a non-topic, you know, five years from now. And so we're really trying to adapt for some of these leading edge products. Like we have products in our portfolio that are like, we are mobile to PC crossplay, and we have IAP, ad revenue, and on-chain marketplace economy. I spent $1. What's my return on iOS? It's like, there's these really complex problems to be solved. And that's from an R&D perspective on our team side. Like that's kind of where we're focused now. It's like, what is the next big innovation that's going to drive breakthrough hit games? And how can we be ready to have a strategy that works while maybe it takes some larger companies more time to adapt of, you know, product offerings for these new segments or kind of combinations of gaming platforms and economic models. So that's really what has us excited and where a lot of our R&D is going right now.
All right, gentlemen, that was my last question. So Levi, Aaron, Warren, thank you so much for all of the insights. And for our audience, we will catch you next time. Thanks. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much, guys.